I had a university professor, one of my earliest mentors, Milton Young, and he sort of gave me permission for something that I wasn't really comfortable like acknowledging myself about. And it's about the whole Trojan horse story. Where basically he gave me permission to just say whatever I needed to say, to package myself however I needed to package myself to get in the door. And then once I was in the room, then I could do what I was really here for. And so I thought that was kind of a dishonest approach, and I was like uncomfortable with it. But yet I couldn't get into any doors, because if I just put out just exactly what I thought and exactly who I was, and then I couldn't get in any doors. In fact, I could hear people bolting the door when I knocked, you know. But he kind of gave me permission, you know, to do that. And so at the time I was working for the Red Cross, the American Red Cross, and I was training first aid instructors for the Red Cross. And it was always a split between what I really loved to do and what I was passionate about and what other people were ready for, or how I could make money and earn a living. So there was like this split all the time. And so I would do stuff to make money, and then I would do what I really loved, you know, giving it away to whoever showed up, who managed to get over my my style, which people stay away from me by the thousands, you know. And so that was like a really great lesson that it's really okay to package something, to present it in such a way that gets people in the door. And then once they're in the door, I mean, who I am is inevitably going to come out. So here we are together, and the theme is weight loss and breath work. And we could have called it anything. The seminar could be about anything, and then once you're here, you're going to get who I am and what I do, regardless of what the name of the seminar is. So I seem to have gotten comfortable with this, and it seems not to be causing any problems. So we're definitely going to address the theme today, and so I can that part of it takes about 5 minutes, and so then the rest of the time, we can be focusing on something under it, something related to it, something really important that without which it really won't work as well. So it's like maybe the difference between you know, a symptom and a cause. You know, you could work on the symptoms. And for many people, that's really enough. I mean, in our kind of pharmaceutical-driven medical world, symptoms are where everybody focuses, and there might even be a kind of a nasty conspiracy to avoid working on the level of causes. So why would you want to put yourself out of business? Why would you want to cure cancer when you can develop a system for managing it forever? Why would you want to cure diabetes when you can make it a manageable disease? Why would you want to cure arthritis if you can help people deal with the pain of it forever? And so there's something, I'm a little bit cynical, maybe, certainly skeptical about things in the mainstream as they relate to illnesses, diseases, and well-being. And so what we'd like to do is address the level of the symptoms, but let's also include addressing the level of the causes underneath. I was really passionate about massage and body work for a time, and I, after a very short time, a year and a half of putting myself out as an intuitive body worker, I had no training other than I got a lot of massage from a lot of different people and knew what I liked and knew what seemed to help me, and so I put that together, and that's how I worked with people. And but I really quickly got the sense that I was chasing something around people's body. So, you know, a guy would come to me with the neck stiffness of pain. So I'd work on his neck. And then he'd come next week and he'd have shoulder pain. Oh, we'd massage his shoulder. Then he came and he had back pain. And then he had knee pain. And I thought, it seems like I'm chasing something around his body. And every time we kind of clear it from one place, it pops up somewhere else. And so I gave up that kind of, that level of helping, let's say. And that was part of a huge chain reaction, that I could relate that to just about everything. So the whole idea of weight problems to me is it's the level of symptoms. And of course you want to deal with them. I mean, if a person's in pain, I was an emergency medical person, and you know, someone's in horrible pain and I have the ability and the authority to give them morphine, it was miraculous for me to see them so quickly and so immediately go from a horrible state of pain to just like, oh, thank you, you know. Now they still had, you know, shattered bones, and they were still, you know, all of the trauma was there. So we were also working on that. So I'm comfortable with working on both those levels. Yeah, let's deal with the symptoms, but let's also, while we're at it, let's dig into the causes and see if we can't create a breakthrough on that level, and then I feel like I really made a difference. I don't go home thinking, well, great, you know, so today we got rid of their headache, but tomorrow they're going to be back with a backache. And so did I really help them? I don't think so. So for me, I get to satisfy myself. And I think I can then give people more of really what's important. So in listening, a couple of things came up. One is the basic idea of, you know, this self-image or self-love. If our love is conditional, then it really doesn't matter what we do or how we improve ourselves or what changes we make. Lacking that really important piece of self-love, we're really not going to get anywhere. So, and on one level, it means to love our body. And so I am my body, and if I only love my body, if my body behaves in a certain way, is shaped in a certain way, feels a certain way, looks a certain way, then my body is going to start to feel like, you don't really freaking love me at all, do you? You love some idea in your head about how I should be, and that's what you love. And so my body is going to sabotage me. Like a child will strike out and act out because it's not being loved. And so now I'm going to make a huge leap right now, which most people are not ready for, and that is this idea of including the body in the eternal life of the spirit. So almost everyone here has been taught and programmed and conditioned to believe that death is inevitable. And when somebody puts out an idea that, you know, actually physical immortality is possible, bolts go up on the door that I'm knocking on. And people don't want to let that idea in because the belief that death is inevitable is so deeply ingrained in us. It is the most widely held mass belief on the planet. Everybody believes that you're born, you live a while, and you die. And anybody who questions that must be retarded or stupid or delusional. And so our minds don't even want to approach that possibility. But think about this. Most of the spiritual traditions put the whole idea of going to heaven or reaching ultimate peace and so on as something that happens after you die. And death is an inevitable required door through which you get to that ultimate eternal joy and peace and so on. And I think it's really valuable and really important to just question that idea. Many, many things that everybody always believed was true, sooner or later are threatened by some rebel. Like, you know, man will never fly. And people who started to try to work on the first flying machines were just weird people that you just joked about. And, oh yeah, you know, those two Wright brothers, and you know, they think that they're going to create a machine that can fly and carry. You know, it was like a ridiculous notion. I'm sure it ain't ridiculous anymore. And things like the 4-minute mile. You know, it was carved in stone that there was a certain limit about how fast a human could run. And 4 minutes was pretty much that boundary. And no one would ever break the 4-minute mile. And what was the guy's name?
Bannister. Roger Bannister.
Bannister, right. So do you know that when he broke the 4-minute mile, within 2 years, you know how many other people broke that record? 50. 50 people within 2 or 3 years broke the 4-minute barrier. So as soon as one person breaks through to a human possibility, it opens a door for others to really go. When I was trained in medicine, and when I was teaching first aid and CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, there was a fact in reality carved in stone about how long a person can go without oxygen before they have permanent brain damage. And that was 4 to 6 minutes. And so as a rescuer, we actually had the choice that if a person had been underwater or had not been breathing for 4 to 6 minutes, as you approach that 6-minute mark or 5-minute mark, you could decide on your own whether you even begin resuscitation. Because if a person was in that 4 to 6 minute range, even if you could resuscitate them, even if you did resuscitate them, they would have permanent brain damage. And you would be reviving a vegetable. And so, okay, so great, you revive the person, now they're alive, but they're brain dead. And they're going to be hooked up to artificial life support for as long as, the electricity is on. And so many people didn't pursue life-saving measures because they realized, you know, it's really too late. It's like, you know, let's not even waste our time and energy. They've been without oxygen too long. And then I had a really remarkable experience in Annapolis, Maryland, in the Chesapeake Bay. I was stationed at the Naval Station, and across the river from the Naval Station was the Naval Academy. And they had a hospital there. And across the river where we were, we had a little medical station. And if anything really serious happened, if somebody needed really serious medical care, we would send them to the hospital across the river. So we had kind of a really fun job in a way. As people came unto us, we could decide whether we even dealt with them. We could just say, oh, you know, let's not even, let's just put them in an ambulance and bring them over to the hospital. So in a way, we were in a really kind of fun position. We could do anything we wanted or nothing, which for a lazy person and somebody with other interests, that was like the ideal job. I was interested in playing pool at the time, pocket billiards. That was my passion. And we had a hospital ward in our clinic with 12 beds. It was like a good old-fashioned hospital ward where patients who needed, you know, kind of extra care slept there, like in a hospital, and with an IV hooked up to them, and you know, a nurse coming three times a night to check and all that stuff. And we never used that. If somebody really needed to be in a hospital, we sent them to the hospital. So I got the brilliant notion one day. I said, let's get rid of 10 of these beds. Let's bring in a pool table. So, and my boss actually liked the idea. He said, hey, yeah, why don't we put a ping pong table too? Okay, let's. So needless to say, we started seeing fewer and fewer people because we would just send them to the hospital. And who wants to disturb your ping pong game and your pool table, you know, just because somebody's sick? However, the local fire, police, emergency personnel had our number when there was a car accident in the area or anything like that. Our phone number was what was out there. They didn't call the hospital at the Naval Academy. They called us. So we got a call one day, and I was really on a run playing pool. It was like one of the best days. You know, sometimes you're just in the zone, and it seems like for no reason at all, your performance is like really up there. And you didn't really do anything different. It was just like, it seemed like a regular day, but for some reason, I could not miss a shot. And the morning started, and we always started playing pool, and I played pool all day long. And on the Navy base, in my medical clinic, I was playing pool all day long. And then when the day was over, I went down the street to Glen Burnie, Maryland, another little town, and I played pool with the civilians. I was like a hustler. And so I played pool all day long, practicing, and then I played pool all night long, stealing money from victims on the pool table. And so that day, I don't know what it was, but I had never been shooting better. And as I started in the morning, I started to really feel it. And like shot after shot, I just could not do anything wrong. It was like amazing. And I'm like looking at my watch going, damn. Like I can't wait till 5 o'clock and I get down to Glen Burnie. I had a list of people I wanted to play, you know. And the phone rang. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the first phone call came from some panicky person who said, there's some two kids in a boat, and the boat tipped over, and it looks like they're drowning. And then they hung up. Well, what the? Well, where? Where? Who? What? What? And so then we got another call from either a police or a fire department saying, we just got a call of a capsized boat and two kids splashing around out under the bridge. We were the closest place. We had a boat right there on the harbor. So when the call came from them, it sounded like they were giving us, they wanted us to go in the ambulance. And so we weren't quite sure. And when somebody came and said, hey, you know, we just got this call from the fire department or rescue squad. They're talking about a boat. And I says, oh, yeah, we just got some panicky call from somebody. And so there was just like a couple of minutes of like confusion. And so I said, well, let's just go. And So we raced, jumped in the car, and we raced down the road, over the bridge, around, and into our rescue boat. And I was looking at my watch, and it had been 9 minutes since we got the call. And people were already on the shore, and they're like pointing. And I could see it looked like the bottom of a boat, but saw nothing else. And it took us another 3 or 4 minutes to get out there. So when we get out there, there was nothing visible. There was no, neither of the boys were visible. And so we're kind of looking around. And so I just dove in the water. And I figured, okay, I'm just going to dive in the water. And I don't know, look around. I dove in the water, and I dove down, and I bumped right into this kid. I mean, what are the odds of that? Like a needle in a haystack. We're talking about a big ocean. I just jumped in a random place, and I literally bumped into him. So I dragged him up, and we put him up in the bottom of the boat, and the other kid was under the sailboat in a little bubble. He was under the boat, and there was an air pocket. And Dennis Quaid, who was my partner in the ambulance, found him. And he was fine. And this other kid that I bumped into, we came up. I mean, he was as dead as anybody that I had ever seen a dead. And Dennis and I, we looked at each other, and it had been like 15 minutes. And so this kid was underwater for at least 10 of those minutes. And I hesitated for a moment, and then I thought, no. We're going to resuscitate. This is the fact that I just bumped into him. What are the odds of that? And I'm not going to like try to resuscitate him. No way. And so we did. And we resuscitated him. And the case was written up. And he was 14 years old. And we revived him. And the case was written up because it was rare that somebody would be underwater that long and that we could revive him. And a couple of... And it was talked about. And one of the things that... one of the conclusions about it didn't make sense, and according to everything, we shouldn't have even tried to resuscitate him. And the fact that we did resuscitate him, it didn't seem possible that he could be a normal kid, but he was. And so one of the ways that we tried to make sense of it was that the water was very cold, and that the cold water somehow had an effect, and had the water been warmer, it would have been a different thing. But the cold water somehow slowed down the inevitable. And now today, has anyone heard of Stig Severinsen? Stig Severinsen lives in Holland. I think he's Dutch. He just broke his own Guinness Book of World Records, which was 20 minutes. By holding his breath underwater for 22 minutes. 22 minutes without breathing underwater. That's mind-boggling. That's unbelievable, most people. But that's where human potential is going. And that's just in one generation. What's happened to human potential is accelerating. And so maybe there are some people who are ready to make a huge leap towards what is possible. And I think it's really important, because if I am a body and you live in me and you want to go to heaven, and so you live in me, you use me up, and when you finally go to heaven, you just throw me away, spit me out, and leave me, I'm going to think, you know what? The hell with you, buddy. Why can't I go with you? And if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't even be going to heaven. And now you just want to dump me and drop me, and you don't even care about me? I think as a child, I would sabotage that person's progress, knowing that they're just using me, and they're going to use me up and then throw me away and then go on to heaven and enjoy the good stuff. I think, maybe it's just me, but I think I would try to sabotage that person's thing just out of anger or resentment, because that's not fair. It ain't fair. And as it turns out, there are immortals. There are people walking the earth today who will never die, who have been alive longer than anyone thinks is humanly possible. And the likelihood of us meeting these immortals is quite slim. In the same way that it's unlikely that you would end up in the same room with Jimmy Buffett or Bill Gates or George Soros or ultra billionaires if you make, you know, 2,000 rand a month, I don't think you really would associate with a certain level, let's say, of economic people of a certain economic level. You just don't mix and mingle. And so think of the gap, think of the space, think of the cultural, psychological, emotional, financial, metaphorically speaking, difference between regular people and immortals. I mean, look at the gap that must exist there. And what are the chances of us, you know, sitting together and having coffee and talking about life? It's almost impossible to relate. And especially if we ourselves have deep embedded beliefs that go against that possibility. So maybe just opening up our consciousness a bit to some possibilities that are way beyond what we have been led to believe will create an opening for something. Right? So if you breathe, everybody realizes that their spirit is eternal. I mean, nobody questions that. And everybody realizes that consciousness is eternal. DNA certainly seems to be eternal, right? I mean, DNA keeps passing itself on by using us. In a way, DNA is using us to perpetuate itself. Think about that, right? We're a host for DNA until we pass on the DNA to the next generation, and then the host is no longer necessary, right? And in the ancient or primal level of life, that's the purpose, the main purpose of each generation is to pass on the DNA to the next generation. And in nature, okay, you're born, you grow until you mate, and then you create a next generation, then you die off. And then that generation grows and they mate, they create the next generation, that generation dies off. So when we look at nature, we go, wow, that's just the way it is. But maybe we can sit up and talk to our DNA and say, wait a minute, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not going to have any more children unless you let me in on your secrets. I mean, what would DNA say if suddenly we realize, oh, the humans are conspiring against us to allow us to perpetuate ourselves? They would have to let us in on their secrets. So you can actually talk to your DNA. You can tell your DNA, say, look, okay, this is the end of the game. From now on, I want to be part of this eternal game. I want to continue on as long as I choose. And I have a good friend, Leonard Orr. If you want to study in immortalist philosophy and immortalist literature, Leonard Orr is one of the leading people on the planet today. And there are many others. You would be surprised if you start Googling physical immortality, longevity. You will surprise yourself at just how many groups and people there are out there with, you know, playing with this notion. And it's nothing else. The idea of questioning the inevitability of death, it's like the cliche, death and taxes are the only things that you can really ever count on. You know? And just, you throw a wrench in that way of thinking. You kind of disturb the machine, the wheels of the machine, by just questioning and saying, hey, wait a minute, who said that? You know? And why isn't something else possible? Why can't I open myself to some possibility? And then maybe the body will begin to relate to us in a different way. Maybe disease and illness and pains is the way of the body complaining to us that we are not loving it enough, that we are not honoring it enough, that we are writing it off somehow or underestimating its potential, not even giving it a chance to express its potential. Not even allowing the possibility that it could have certain potentials. So this is a real leap for people, and I just wanted to touch on it. Because we work with the breath, and so here's an idea that if I breathe into the cells of my body, I mean, life is eternal. Anybody probably would agree with that, that life is eternal. We just keep seeing it. No matter what, life keeps bouncing back. Life keeps it so abundant. You plant one kernel of corn and you end up with an ear of corn, and now you have 1,000 kernels, and you plant those and you have 100,000. And it's like everywhere we look, one of the essential qualities or aspects of nature is abundance, unlimited abundance. And so why shouldn't we be reflecting that? We're nature. We're a part of nature. Why do we seem to take a different course towards you know, termination? There's nothing terminal about life. It just keeps going to the next level and constantly flourishing. You can stamp it out here and it'll pop up there. You can kill it here and it'll pop up there. And so that's something about our nature. So loving your body to no end. Loving your body to no end. Unconditionally accepting your body. Inviting your body to take part and to participate and express this infinite eternal quality of life. Letting it be an expression of that. Inviting it to be. Why not? The body keeps, the natural tendency of the body is to heal itself. If we provide the right, you know, give it sun, give it water, and it'll grow. You know, like any plant. The body, given a chance, given an opportunity, will rejuvenate, will heal itself. We have to stop doing whatever we're doing that's interfering in that natural rejuvenation capacity it has. We must be doing a lot to interfere with that. And people are certainly dying younger than, if you think, what is it, 7 times the age of maturity is what, most animals live to. We should be living to 130 minimum, just to average out with the rest of the creatures on the planet. So we must be doing something to prevent the full free expression of our human potential, and so doing that work and opening up to those possibilities can result in some real transformation and a leap towards more possibilities, longer life, higher quality of life, and so. You want to lose weight? Drop heavy thoughts. Death is the heaviest thought there is. So drop that one. Go on a mental diet. And start fasting from certain thoughts. Okay? Stop swallowing certain ideas. Stop carrying certain beliefs. And see if your body doesn't lighten up. It will. It does. It has to. So, you want to lose weight? Start doing some work on another level besides just that physical surface symptom level. Examine your beliefs. And what thoughts and beliefs do you have that are heavy? That are negative? That are depressing, that are a weight to bear, and start dropping them, and replace them with lighter thoughts. And you know what? The thoughts don't have to be proven true. It can just be a thought that you hold because it just gives you a feeling of peace, gives you a feeling of lightness. It just feels good to believe certain things. Whether they're true or not doesn't matter because you're working with your consciousness. And if you have a consciousness that is laden and burdened with thoughts that you think you must believe because they're true or whatever, you're carrying extra weight that's keeping you from ascending, keeping you from being uplifted. And so I think that's the first diet. If you really want to lose weight, start on the level of consciousness and examine your beliefs and judge your thoughts. Does this thought bring me peace? Yes or no? Doesn't matter whether it's true or not. Doesn't matter whether I'm supposed to think it or not. Does it give me peace? Yes or no? If it gives me peace, then I hold the thought. If it doesn't, then I drop it like a hot potato. And start dropping thoughts and beliefs you have about yourself. Negative, limiting thoughts that you have about yourself. There are parts of yourself that you love and parts of yourself that you approve of. And there are other parts that you don't love and other parts that you don't approve of. You need to love those parts also. Don't wait until they become better before you love them. Don't wait for your body to assume its perfect shape and size before you embrace it and love it. Start loving it exactly how it is, where it is, the way it is, period. Just as it is, embrace it totally with unconditional love and beam and project as much love to it as you can. Bathe it, shower it in love and approval and gratefulness and acceptance. Don't wait for it to get better before you do that. It won't get better until you do that. And so that's a start. Any reactions to any of that? Yeah.
The eternity of life, vis-a-vis physical mortality. How would you attain?
How would you attain it?
Eternity of life.
Right. I would first realize and acknowledge that it's already happening. Like right now in our body, what's the oldest cell in our body? A few months, maybe. I mean, cells are constantly renewing themselves. And so we look at our body and we say, oh, my body is 50, 60, 70, 30, whatever years old. But there isn't a single cell in your body that's that old. So start to attain it. First, begin to recognize that it is already so. There isn't a cell in your body that's more than 6 months or old. Or what's the longest cell? Stomach cell? Stomach cells replace themselves within minutes. And certain cells within days, and other cells, you know, last weeks. And I think the longest living cells, I'd like to get somebody to look this up, it can't be more than a few months.
Even the organs in your body completely renew
themselves. Right. So there's nothing to attain, there's only something to realize. Right? And the more you begin to acknowledge it and realize it, the more it expresses, the more it begins to emerge. So I think that's it. And then the attainment of it is to begin to live in harmony with the laws that that control it. Look at the laws of nature, and whenever you can, harmonize with those laws. Look at the spiritual principles, and whenever you can, express them yourself. Come into harmony, into resonance with them. The attainment may have to do with simply the dropping away of that which is preventing our attainment. There's really nothing to do to attain, but there might be a lot to do to realize what we're doing unknowingly that's keeping us from the attainment. So, for me, the first step is consciousness, awareness. First, open your mind to the possibilities, right? And then, letting go. You practice the skills of letting go. If I just keep letting go, letting go, letting go, I will drop away everything except that which I cannot let go, and that is my essence, who I really am. You can't let that go. So you end up, if you drop everything else, you end up with this pure shining reality that is you. So the skill of letting go of thoughts, letting go of feelings, letting go of the past, letting go of muscles, letting go of tension, letting go of negative beliefs, letting go of bad habits, letting go, letting go, letting go. I think that's a real key to attainment, is get really good at letting go. And then you apply that letting go to whatever's holding you back, unknowingly holding you back. And then the next thing is to begin to invite energy. So we're back to the breath now. If I breathe into my body the breath of life, the eternal breath of life, and I fill my cells with this eternal life, and I fill the spaces between my cells with this energy, then my body really has no choice but to take on the qualities of that spirit. So I breathe spirit into my body. Spirit is eternal. So if I fill my body with spirit, then my body is going to have to take on the qualities of spirit, because I'm infused with spirit. And so my body, whether it likes it or not, or whether I believe it or not, is going to be provoked into taking part in the nature of spirit, in the aspects and the qualities of spirit, which are infinite, eternal, and so on. So consciously breathing in meditation, where I'm breathing into myself eternal life, spirit, infusing every cell with breath, inviting that breath to get into all the cracks and crevices between each cell, and I'm going to be wall-to-wall spirit. And a great friend, Ken Copeland, it was like one of those Christian evangelical charismatic teachers in the United States. He would say, you know, I'm wall-to-wall Holy Ghost, you know. And but that's like a key. You just keep inviting, welcoming, absorbing spirit. And your body will take on, will suffer the benefits. All right. So another one, somewhere about, I know what I need to do, but somehow taking the action, that's where the gap exists. And that's true that people say, I know I need to exercise, and we do, we know we need, but somehow we just don't. I know I should eat better, but somehow we just don't. I know I should quit smoking, but somehow we just don't. I know I should have a more positive attitude, but somehow I just... So there's that gap, and that's the real key. The gap between knowing what we need to do and really having a kind of a sense of it and a desire for it, but then translating that into action. That's where people get stuck. That's where things stop. So, I have a solution for that. And there's a very simple solution for that. Breathing is an action. Breathing is a primal action. So I have a thought, and as soon as I have that thought or that intention, I take a breath. What have I done? I have closed the gap between a thought and the action. And then pretty soon, it's impossible without thinking something. It's impossible to think something without taking action on it. That's why I have to be very careful about what I read. I can't watch the news. If I hear a program about somebody mutilating children somewhere in the world, if I know that and I think, oh my God, somebody has to do something to stop this, I'm going to find myself on a freaking plane on my way to that place. I can't think about that stuff without this irresistible urge to take some action connected to it. So breathing does that. It closes the gap between when we have a thought or an intention and when we take an action. So we bring together an intention and action when we consciously breathe. I have a thought, I'd like to invite the spirit of breath within me. Oh, how do I do that? I think about it for a while. No. You have that immediate thought, take a breath. I've closed the gap between thought and action, between a decision and action, between an intention and then doing something from that intention. So conscious breathing closes that gap. So, that's a key thing, and that's one of the powerful benefits of conscious breathing. So if all you even have is just the wish or the desire or an intention to lose weight, while you are holding that thought, while you are entertaining that desire, you know, while you are thinking that, take a breath. That's an action. It's a very primal action. And you have now linked a thought to an action, an intention to a doing. And that's like planting a seed. And the more often you do that, the more often it becomes automatic. And so, you know, do away with the, okay, so tomorrow I start. All right, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, I'm going to the gym. No. You had the thought right now, okay, the gym is closed. How can I go to the gym? It closed at 5 o'clock. I have to wait. Well, that's fine. Take a breath. Do some action right now. And breathing is a really easy action to take. So there's no excuse not to. You don't have to wait. Here it is. And so then what you do is you put energy into the breath. You breathe energy into your intention. And something's going to start to build and spiral from that. And things will accelerate. So, good.
Depending on my own personal journey, I relate a lot of what you say. Who are just still starting out on the journey, and trying to support them in that journey. You mentioned about dropping heavy thoughts, and to someone who has learned how to do that, you can relate.
Mm-hmm.
But when you haven't even learned how to do that, it's very difficult to relate to that state. If you don't even know you're having these thoughts,
how do
you
even
start to
get them? Right. I think if we start from just the basic, say, technical, mechanical, energetic ability to let go. So we just start by learning to let go of the exhale. And that's going to spark a process. That's going to initiate a journey. And then the next step will come. So we get them to start by mastering this skill of letting the exhale go, right? So just snapping the exhale loose, dumping the exhale out, letting the exhale go. We start from that. You don't have to let anything else go. You just let the breath go. And whatever you need to let go of will bubble up into your awareness. And then the person, their intuition and the natural process will start to reveal itself. The person will get in touch with a muscle that is not letting go. So if I practice letting go of the breath, and if I can see or notice that some part of me is not letting go along with the breath, then that becomes my focus. So if I do this, look what happens. So this didn't let go, right? So I'm somehow managing to let go of the air, however, it's very obvious then I'm not letting go physically. So what I want to do then, my next step in my own process is obvious. I want to link letting go of the breath with letting go of this armor, right? Now it's obvious. I'm letting go of the breath, and I'm letting go of this place I was holding on to. And if I'm with a coach, it's very obvious, someone from the outside, and you are all already experts of coaching, you could point that out to me. If I wasn't aware of it myself, you could easily point that out to me. And or somebody who's doing this, and you say, "Wow, relax your shoulders." They go, "Yeah, my shoulders are relaxed." What do you mean? They're very relaxed. And so something's obvious to you that's not obvious to them. It's so chronic that they don't even notice it. "Well, I'm totally relaxed. You know, why would you say I'm not relaxed? I'm really relaxed." And so there are some things that are really obvious to even a stranger with no skills or education that we seem to be oblivious to. And so making use of a coach, well, is a real shortcut. But if you take this practice, and let's start it right now, because if you want to lose weight, it means letting go of something. You want to, the weight should drop off of you. And the body will tend to shed weight. Left to itself, allowed to function normally, the body will shed whatever weight is unnecessary. So if it's not doing that, you must be doing something to hold on to it. No, I really want to lose weight. I'm not holding on. You must be. And so...
That's the first thing that people will say to you.
Yeah. Right.
I don't binge eat.
Right. I'm doing all these things, but they haven't gotten to the subconscious or unconscious stuff. You know, and that's much more powerful than all the conscious things that we do, are the unconscious things that drive us from a level beneath or outside of our awareness. And so we don't even know to identify them.
In psychology journals, they say we have something like 55,000 thoughts a day, of which most of us don't even realize those thoughts, and because they're subconscious or in the unconscious. And of those 5,000, a pretty positive person apparently only has about 5,000 positive thoughts out of those 55,000 thoughts a day. So the other 50,000 are of some kind of negative connotation or something. And I know that when I was really, I had been training very hard, I stopped training. And I kept breathing, but I stopped training, and I became very, very fat. And when I became very, very fat, I realized that my training was holding me, my self-confidence, that all of a sudden I stopped training, and I was feeling a bit unsure about myself, and suddenly I started thinking away. So I had to start working on all those limiting self-beliefs, and exactly what Dan was saying.
Yeah, our unconscious thoughts, the unconscious stuff, is what we need to get to. And as you work with the breath, you will arrive at that level. You will pierce that unconscious. You'll break into it, and it will reveal its contents to you. And then as it reveals its contents to you, you are using your breath to let go, let go, let go, clearing away all that stuff that's holding you back. So that's the first skill, letting go. Learn and practice and master that ability to let go of your exhale. Now, it's a reflex, and it's as simple as this. So if I just let go, and this movement happens, I don't have to go... So it's a letting go. That skill. So just practice it a couple times now and just see if you can get a feel for it. The bigger the inhale is, the more you create a stretching, the more elastic tendency can do the exhale for you. So you take a big inhale. Then when you let go, breath pours out of you. Give yourself that feeling right now. Take a breath and stretch everything. Then let go and feel the breath pour out of you without blowing or pushing. Just through this letting go, the breath escapes. And it doesn't escape slowly. It's not like this. That's another exercise that we will practice. But what we want to do is engage this total, quick, momentary, complete letting go. That's how long it takes. So you just let go completely for that long. It's a skill. And you can practice and get better and better. You can hone the skill, refine the skill, improve on the skill. A little quick improvements, a couple of quick improvements. Notice the difference between this letting go. And this. And this. Okay. It's kind of like a pushing on one, right? That's different than... Really letting go. And that's also a sign of really, you know, of passion. And okay, I really want to do this right. I really... It's a good sign. It means, well, you're really enthusiastic. You're really trying to do your best. But, you know, the doing part can actually interfere with the being. So, we don't want to back off from the enthusiasm and the determination and the real desire to really, okay, I'm really going to do this, you know. And if we take all that away, then, oops, now we have to try to get some of it back until we kind of find just the right balance. So, but it is an undoing more than a doing. Relaxation is about undoing. You can't do a relaxation technique. It's kind of... an oxymoron on one level. It's an undoing. The doing is the inhale. I simply stop inhaling, and when I stop inhaling, the exhale happens. Right? So watch how this goes. So I didn't do the exhale. I was inhaling, inhaling, inhaling. I stopped inhaling, and then the exhale happened. Right? So watching you, what's your name?
Karina.
Karina. So watching her shoulders during the inhale. Excellent. I can see her drop her shoulders during the exhale. An improvement on that would be not to lift your shoulders at all on the inhale. Right? So if I lift my shoulders on the inhale, and then I perfectly let them go, and then I lift them, Let them go. Lift them. Let them go. I'm really not releasing any tension that is stored in my shoulders. The tension that I'm releasing is the tension that I just produced by lifting my shoulders. So I lift my shoulders. I produce tension in my shoulders. Then I very perfectly let go of that tension. But the only tension that I released was the tension that I just produced. And I'm not getting to the tension that is stored in my shoulders. Right? So then we improve on the skill. I learn to inhale without using my shoulders, right? Now when I relax my shoulders, I'm beginning to let go of the tension that is stored in my shoulders. By not producing new tension, I can start to release the tension that's already there. So the shoulders will lift. I'm not lifting them, because as my chest expands top to bottom, as it should, side to side and front to back, my shoulders are riding on my rib cage. And so as my rib cage expands and my collarbones rise up, my shoulders are going to, just like riding a wave, a boat sits on the ocean and the wave comes, the boat doesn't pick itself up, it's riding the wave, and so it seems like the boat goes up and down, but it really doesn't, it's just riding that wave. So yeah, you'll see shoulders rise up with the breath. It's natural, they're riding the wave of breath, but I'm not using them. So it conserves energy. The inhale can be you can get more energy from the inhale, because the energy is not being used up by muscular activity. If I don't use a lot of muscular effort to take in energy, then all the energy I take in is available to me. If I use up X amount of energy in muscular activity to gain X amount of energy, there's no net gain, right? If I use a lot of energy to pull in energy, I don't really have any profit. All the energy I pulled in went into the act of pulling it in, and there's no energy left over to do healing. However, if I can pull in a lot of energy with no effort, I have a lot of net gain. I have a lot of profit. A lot of energy is left over after the activity that wasn't eaten up by the activity, and now that energy can do its work. So we're practicing that one starting skill, the ability to let go of the exhale, set the exhale free, dump the exhale out, release the exhale. Basic skill. Practice it, practice it, practice it, and be very conscious and start to remove any unnecessary effort without removing the amount of energy you're getting, right? So the ideal is to pull in a big, huge, amazing, powerful breath without using any effort. That's what you're aiming for. And in the beginning, it's like a child learning to write. They're putting so much into the writing that there's nothing graceful about it. They're putting effort in places that have nothing to do with the writing. And it's only after they start to develop some confidence, they start to refine, they get more graceful, and then pretty soon they can write and they're not using muscles and... That's a good sign. They're trying really hard. They're passionate about what they're doing, but they're wasting a lot of energy. They're putting energy into things that really don't, really have nothing to do with what they're writing. So it's a good sign. It shows passion, shows determination, but it also reflects a certain inefficiency, uneconomical, wasted energy kind of aspect. So in the beginning, it's okay. Make all those mistakes. And then gradually with practice, you yourself or a coach can begin to point out how you're wasting energy, how you're holding on and not letting the exhale be total. And then that will lead to the next thing about the person will realize, okay, I need to let go of this. Aha, you've realized something. So now you apply the breath to let go of that. It's a thought I had. It's a habit I have. It's a whatever, a posture that I assume. And you will start to be guided by your own intuition. Your own intelligence will reveal to you where to take the process next. So, that's the first skill, letting the exhale go. And that exercise is actually very different than the exercise, the training for weight loss. And so the training for weight loss, what's the connection? Okay, the connection is that how is fat burned in the body? Oxygen. Oxygen burns fat. So, the better we are at the uptake of oxygen, the more fat will burn. The better we are at the retention of oxygen, the more fat will get burned. So the breathing exercises are about increasing the uptake and retention of oxygen. And that accelerates the fat burning process. So, the more fat you burn, the more weight you lose. The more oxygen you take in, the more fat you burn. The more oxygen you retain, the more fat you burn. The more fat you burn, the more weight you lose. That's it. That's the connection to breath. So now, what are the exercises that help us to increase the uptake of oxygen and increase the retention of oxygen? For that, we need a very expensive device. Happen to have them on sale today for just 750 Rand. Only for participants of this workshop do you get the special sale price, 750 Rand. Now, don't try to copy these, and don't just think you can just go and buy one that looks like it and think it's going to work just as well. This is a very special one that I've had manufactured. You get a black one because you're a black girl. You get a black one. And look at this. I happen to pick exactly the right number of straws. Now, see, the divine is always in charge. So, you should probably knit yourself a very nice little pouch to keep that in. You should put it on your altar, and you should really make it a very sacred device. McDonald's might be a really good church to go to get a collection of these, because McDonald's has several versions of this device. The coffee stirrers at McDonald's are very thin, hollow, stiff little straws. You'd like one of those. It's a little tiny, tiny straw. And they make these thick smoothies, so they've got these big fat straws. This is the one in the middle. And so you could get all three. Get one that's skinnier than this. Get one that's fatter that you suck the smoothies through. And this one. And you'll have three devices that you can use. And you might want to start with the fat one. We're starting with the middle-sized one because McDonald's was too far to walk today and I have to use the Woodlands version. Someone must be missing because I have two straws left and one of them is for me. There's a device called the Froloff device and it's being marketed as Breath Slim. And I don't know what they're selling the device for anymore. I should look it up. But it's a little package. It comes with a DVD. And it's a little cup with a cover and a straw. And it sells for about $300. It's made of plastic.
I have one.
Huh?
I have one.
You got one? How much?
$550.
Such a deal. You use water. So you put a certain amount of water in the bottom of this cup, And then you breathe and you blow bubbles. And the idea is to use the bubbles as a kind of a monitor, and you make the bubbles smooth. So you get a very consistent flow. As you're breathing out, you get a certain steady, consistent flow of bubbles. It's not like, and the bubbles and then nothing. You gradually practice, you get really good at doing a long exhale where it's a smooth, steady exhale. Right? They arrived at a really simple formula, which I think is really good. You could use timing, like you could use a watch. And here's the formula. You inhale for the count of five. You hold your breath for the count of five. And then you exhale for the count of ten. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. So that formula, you could, if you count it in seconds, it might be pretty tough for beginners. It might take you some practice to get comfortable with that, because 5 plus 5 is 10, plus 10 is 20, plus 5 is 25. So in a minute, that would be you're talking about just over 2 breaths a minute. And that's, if you can accomplish 2 breaths a minute, that's very slow breathing. So you might want to start with 3 or 4 breaths a minute. So count 4, hold 4, exhale 8. Or count 3, hold 3, exhale 6. But you see the ratio, the proportion is the same, right? Inhale for the count of 3, hold for the count of 3, exhale for the count of 6. Hold for the count of 3, inhale for the count of 3, hold for the count of 3, exhale 6. Inhale 3, hold 3, exhale 6. But you want to work your way to 5, 5, and 10. Right? The straw helps you to not let a lot of breath out all at once, which is the opposite of what we were just practicing, right? The first basic exercise that I teach is to let all the breath out quickly. If I do that same thing, if I let go completely through a straw, I let go completely, but it's going to take time for all the air to come out, which is exactly what increases your oxygen retention, right? By limiting the passage through which the air can come out, the air takes longer to come out. However, I can relax behind that quite easily, right? And just let the air out slowly. So you have to control the exhale in order for the exhale to be longer and longer and longer. You need to control the exhale. This just helps you to control the exhale. It gives you a physical structure through which only a limited amount of air can pass, and so it's going to take a certain amount of time for all the air to come out. So you don't have to worry about holding or controlling the exhale. You let this control the exhale for you, right? So, so it'll take a long time for all the air to come out, even though I'm not holding on to it. Right? The pressure behind in my system is forcing the air out. And that's one of the principles for maximizing the oxygen intake and oxygen retention, is you create some back pressure in the lungs. And that back pressure in the lungs forces the oxygen to stay in your system longer, giving your system more time to absorb the oxygen. You're retaining the oxygen in your system longer. If I do this, a lot of the air that came in goes right back out and none of it was absorbed, right? It just came in, came right out. If I hold it, now my system is going to absorb that breath. It's going to absorb that energy. The longer I hold it, the more time the body has to absorb that oxygen. And then the slower I let the breath out, the more I'm retaining that, then again, the more time my body has to really get every, you know, extract that oxygen. So this causes you to slow your breathing down. And the counting and the deliberate breath holding causes you to slow the breath down, giving your body a chance to really absorb the oxygen.
And then the other reason it absorbs is because you're not blowing with too much carbon dioxide. So if you don't have carbon dioxide, you're able to make the body vasodilation, and that vasodilation, you know, oxygen can move right to the capillary, okay, the dilated capillary. So that increases oxygen utilization.
Right. Carbon dioxide is the key trigger for allowing oxygen to go from your bloodstream into your tissues, and from the tissues, the cellular environment, into the cells themselves. Carbon dioxide is the trigger for that. The higher your level of CO2, the more everything dilates, microvessels dilate, so it sets the stage for the delivery of oxygen to the tissue. So you have little microvessels. And if you have a low carbon dioxide level in your system, it can, all the microvessels constrict. If you have a high level of carbon dioxide, those microvessels dilate. So by holding your breath, carbon dioxide is building up in your system. And as the carbon dioxide builds up in your system, it starts to open little microvessels everywhere. Microvessels dilate. And when the microvessels dilate, blood nutrients can get into all the little spaces, right? So that's the second and main thing that's happening with extending your exhale, making the exhale longer, making the hold breath holding longer. You're really holding back the carbon dioxide from escaping. And as the carbon dioxide builds up, it triggers lots of things, and then the oxygen is free to jump and make cross over the barrier into the cells. And so CO2 is the thing, and CO2 is good for you and tasty too. So
does it also do something to the thickness of the blood?
I don't know. Thickness of the blood.
Well, it would decrease the thickness of the
platelet.
Thank you, Doctor. So you can use this count, the Breath Slim people and Froloff, they've done a lot of research on it, and so I really trust them. He's dead, by the way, Froloff, as is Buteyko, two amazing outlander pioneers in breathing, and there's a lot of suspicion about both of their deaths. They were very anti-mainstream medical, anti-pharmaceutical, and a lot of people think that they just, somebody wanted them to shut up. It just wasn't good for business to have people out there saying you don't need to take your asthma medication, you can heal yourself. And they died relatively young, both in their early 70s. Which means to me they were missing something. And so that's why I just, if you notice, I just gave you two very opposing, conflicting exercises, if you look at it in a dual kind of way. One exercise, which I say is really, really important, just snap the exhale loose, dump the exhale out, don't control the exhale at all. And I'm giving you something that is training you to control your exhale, to hold your breath. And it's up to you to work that out and make peace with that. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with opposites. In fact, I love bringing opposites together. And there's no one good or bad or one... They're, it's part of a continuum. I don't really have a problem with that. And so what I suggest is that you do both exercises with equal passion. They are very different. And so you want to give each one time and space, get comfortable with each one, and get good at both of them.
That's a gruesome device. It was really funny because I thought as a breath worker, when I first tried it, I thought, it's so easy. It was like, it was a complete shock because you know, you sort of hold it and hold, and then you breathe out. You're not allowed to let the water carry over there. You're supposed to be able to control the outtake of your breath. So me, he's just going, it was actually quite an interesting experiment for me to retrain myself to, okay, let's control the out breath. And I just thought, oh my goodness, that's just amazing, you know, to learn a different technique. Because all the time I was saying,
But opposite can be, because I was going to see yoga for me, and that's what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the idea, is to get comfortable with the full range so you're not stuck on one side or struggling if life pushes you to the other side. You're equally comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a question on the letting go. Would you consciously think let go? Or
yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Consciously or verbalize letting go?
Yeah, give yourself a mental message. Let go, I am relaxing. Give yourself a real experience of it. Feel the letting go. Listen to the sound of letting go. Make a let go sound. Be careful of the blowing. So, in watching you, you wouldn't do this. Because just the shape doesn't harmonize with the sense or the idea of letting go. Letting go is right? So to get the most out of this, let's just practice a little. Use the count of 5. Inhale 5. Hold 5. Exhale 10. And then skip the pause. Just go right into the inhale. Inhale 5. Hold 5, exhale 10. Inhale 5, hold 5, exhale 10. And then just adjust the speed of your count to something you can manage. It doesn't have to be 5 seconds. It can just be the count of 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You want to be out at the edge of your comfort zone. You don't want to be struggling to do it. That's not... You're going to lose your motivation if you struggle. Your system's going to sabotage and back off and go, no, this is stressful. It's not going to let you practice. So you've got to bring it into a comfort range. But don't bring it into a comfort range that doesn't test you, cause you to kind of really, okay. So you want to be on the edge of your comfort. Not uncomfortable, but not cozy in the middle of your comfort. You've got to get out to the edge a little bit, tax your system a little bit, So pick a count. So just pick a count. And if after a few breaths you're feeling short of breath, okay, speed up the count just a little bit. Because that slight discomfort, you want that. That means you're right at the edge. And if you can hang out there and get comfortable there, you'll have a breakthrough. If you escape back to the middle of your comfort zone, you're going to thwart your growth. If you go outside of your comfort zone, your system's going to shut down and won't let you continue. So you want to be up to the edge of your comfort, where you feel like, okay, you're dealing with a certain feeling that's, you know, but not really uncomfortable, just kind of something, right? That's where you will get the glow. So just let's do this for a couple of minutes. So using the straw, pick your own count, breathing in. You might, if you sense that air is escaping through your nose, you might want to pinch your nose. Not totally necessary, but useful. If you can just breathe through your mouth without breathing through your nose, you don't need to pinch your nose. But if you sense any air escaping through your nose, you need to pinch it. If not, you don't need to pinch it. I like to use my heartbeat to count. I can feel it. So my heartbeat sets the pace. But you just decide on the count. It should be a little challenging physiologically, but not overly uncomfortable. In order to really maintain this, it helps if you relax physically. So make sure your neck is relaxed, your shoulders are relaxed, because muscular tension draws energy. And so if you can relax, it's easier to breathe slowly because there's not a lot of metabolic demand for energy. If you're using a lot of muscles, then you need to breathe more quickly. If you're not using any muscles, if you're relaxed completely, it's much easier to slow the breath down, to breathe less frequently. Now, with some practice, you don't need a straw. You can limit the flow of breath by locking a portion of your throat, by breathing through your nose and doing something to narrow the passage so you can create kind of an internal straw effect. You could breathe through one nostril. So there are other ways without having to use a device, because what is the device doing is just creating a narrow passage. You could create a narrow passage yourself in some way and accomplish the same thing. Now, to get the most out of this exercise and to kind of say multiply the benefits of it, you will want to start to do something with your body to help. And so when we get through, you can lay like this with your knees bent up, and you're sending the breath low into your belly. And you exaggerate the movements. And hold for the count of five. Exhale. And then I create a squeezing effect. Squeeze. Now, as I breathe, you notice something's happening with the pelvis. When I inhale, the belly pops out, and there's an arch, there's a space now in my lower back, my spine is arched. Then as I exhale, I'm flattening my spine to the floor, and my pelvis is tipping. So inhale, exhale. Now I'm actually using the breath to prompt a very effective movement of the body that's going to help the whole process burning fat. So this exercise, the slow, you can do it just with the breathing. You don't have, you can sit. It's said that it's really important when you practice the straw breathing to keep your spine straight. It certainly helps. The diaphragm is anchored to the spine, and depending on the position of the spine, the diaphragm is either going to be inhibited or allowed to move. So the kind of yogic idea of having a good, straight, erect spine enhances the practice. And, you know, making yourself sort of tall, stretching your spine so that your spine is kind of erect. And as you exhale, the belly button travels towards the spine. And when you inhale, breath goes down into the belly. The belly fills like a balloon. As you exhale, belly button travels towards the spine. And you want to exaggerate those movements. Exaggerate the filling of the belly and the emptying, the squeezing. And then you can start to play creatively with those muscles. So, for example, if during the exhale, I squeeze everything in here, belly button travels toward the spine, squeezing everything, and then I hold that and inhale. Inhale against that holding. And then exhale and squeeze even more. Then inhale against that, and then exhale, squeezing more, then relax. Whew, I just did an exercise. I can feel more heat in my body. I've kind of stimulated some metabolic activity, so you can accelerate the whole process and the benefits. And the final exercise is reverse respiration. And that's where you do exactly the opposite of what I just pointed out. When you inhale, you pull in on the belly. And when you exhale, you push out the belly. Inhale, suck the belly in. Exhale, push the belly out. It's a Qigong exercise. It's a Chinese medical breathing exercise called reverse respiration or paradoxical breathing. That creates real powerful internal, intra-abdominal forces that, those creating that force and stretching inside activates and stimulates a lot. It helps with digestion, it helps with gynecological issues, and it increases the energetic activity, stimulating circulation, and so on. So, let me review, because I've given you a few things and some of them are very opposite, right? The first skill, learning to let go of the exhale. Quickly, completely, without holding, without controlling. And when you do that, you drop into yourself. You melt into yourself. You sink into your center. You fall into your center. It's like leaving the surface and settling deeper into yourself. Snapping the exhale loose, not controlling the exhale, dumping the exhale out, setting the exhale free. First breathing exercise. Opposite of that, the next exercise is controlling the exhale. We're counting to 10 on the exhale. You're stretching the exhale out. And you're holding the breath for 5 seconds or the count of 5 before you exhale. Right? So you inhale. Hold for the count of 5. Exhale for the count of 10. Inhale for the count of 5. Very regulated, rhythmic breathing for increasing oxygen uptake, because you are holding your breath, CO2 is building up, and that's what sparks the acceleration of the increase of oxygen uptake. Breathing out slowly. Not controlling the exhale, because this will help you to control it, so you don't have to control it so much. But you could remove the straw. When you get a sense of how much air comes out, you can duplicate that internally just by putting a little hole in your lips here and breathing through this little hole. You can replace the straw. But since you paid so much for this thing, I would say use it. So now, what I'd like to do is 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11. Is find a partner, and just, we want to play. I'd like to see that at least you've got, because there's a natural way that the body wants to move when you breathe. And if you can come into harmony with that, the breath moves the body in a certain way when you breathe. And so you can move your body in a way to support the breath. So the movement of breath supports and produces a natural movement of the body. And by moving the body in that natural way, you support the breath. And so you can start to kind of make love to your body with every breath. Start to really fully and totally embody spiritual, your spiritual being. Start to use the breath to really totally love your body. So you're breathing into your body and you're moving the body in a certain way to really, magnify or intensify this relationship between the breath and the body so that they really kind of come together. So there's an odd number, so let me use, maybe I'll use here as a model, if you can come here, because this is what we're going to be doing, you'll be doing with your partner. So you just lay and bend your knees up, and you're focusing the breath on your belly, so you could even put your hands on your belly. And as she's breathing in, you can watch her belly rise, so her chest is moving, so you're going to get the breath down in the belly. So you focus on the belly and breathe into the belly. Send all the breath into the belly. There it is, there it is. Good. It overflows into the chest, that's okay. But focus really in the belly, fill up the belly. There it is. And then exhaling. Then fill up the belly. So you're sending the breath very low into the belly. You can see how her breath is kind of rising in the chest also. So this ability to isolate this breathing section is really useful, important. To be able to just isolate the lower breathing space and allow the chest to just rest and not be involved in the breathing at all. And just isolate the breathing in the belly. Good. So you could monitor both places and feel what moves. So we can see her chest is really alive with every breath. It's kind of patterned. Right? So a really good exercise for her is to isolate this area and allow this top area to be completely uninvolved in the breathing. Just isolate the lower section. And then magnify and intensify the movement here and begin to use the body to help. Right? So on the inhale, the spine is arching. And then on the exhale, you flatten the spine to the floor. Inhale, you arch the spine, fill up the belly with breath. Exhale. So the body starts to like move. The pelvis rotates this way. And then the exhale, pelvis rotates this way. Inhale, pelvis rotates. Exhale, spine flattens. So you can actually pump air in and out of the body and not even do the breathing. You just relax your throat, open the breath, and just move your body in this way, and the body will pump air in and out. Just the movements, pressing the lower spine, arching the lower back. Pressing the lower spine to the floor, arching the lower back. And it will draw the breath in, and then squeeze the breath out. And draw the breath in, even without doing the breathing, just the body will pump the air in and out. And then you can begin to help it. So when you're turning the pelvis, and you squeeze the breath out. You fill up the belly and arch your spine, draws the breath in, and help the breath go in. Ooh, good. And this starts to happen. Notice that her head is following the same movement of her pelvis. That's natural. Pelvis turns this way and the head tips this way. Pelvis turns this way and the head tips this way. So this is a very good weight loss exercise. And combining it with the breath, you'll get a lot really fast. So that's what we're going to do. Right? So just find a partner and let's just start the practice, and I'll go around and give you any tips or help as you go. But we want to just take a few minutes and just see if you can get a sense of it, so when you leave today you'll have a good sense of the breathing exercise and the movements. one person lay down and the other one...